Hello, hello, and welcome into yet another episode, another week, another year, another season of Hate the Player, Not the Game. As always, I'm Lucas Owens at a very different time on a very different day. Moved the show to Fridays this semester, so should be a long and fun year this year. Got a lot of stuff going on over the summer that I could talk about, just not enough time any week really to do that. But yeah, just appreciative to get back into it, talk some college football and baseball today. Then, you know, as other sports start to get rolling, we can talk about that. But man, already a lot of college football games going on. We got really the last month of MLB, this month should be a wildly fun September in baseball. Got pretty much every division race but two up for grabs right now. So let's get right into it, less dilly-dallying. So let's start out with everybody's, including mine, favorite team to laugh at, the Nebraska Cornhuskers. The Nebraska Cornhuskers lost their opening game of the year 22-30 against the Illinois Fighting Illini. So, you know, Bert Bielema off to a really good start. Scott Frost continues to struggle and not be able to beat Illinois. But this Nebraska team, just not very good. So Illinois didn't look good as well, honestly. Illinois built up a lead and then almost lost it. But really, when you look at this, this is just a matter of Nebraska. It's really, people always say they have a lot of potential. I honestly don't see it anymore. It's been too long since Nebraska's been really amazingly good that I think it's going to take a long time for Nebraska to build themselves up into a power again. But Illinois, you know, they looked good. Of course, they're facing their schedule, though, so it's going to be rather tough for them going ahead. But Nebraska, it's really, really bad. Scott Frost was on the hot seat before the season. This only increases it. I think they're going to need at least a bowl berth for him to have any shot. And that's just any. I think if he goes 6-6, even if they do get to a bowl, he could be gone. Just because of the new AD being in there and, you know, him not meeting expectations. But man, it's really interesting to look back at it and two coaches had their best seasons under Mackenzie Milton and have not gone close to that height again. Both Scott Frost and Josh Heupel did that. Josh Heupel actually got his first win as Tennessee head coach yesterday. Not enough time to talk about that in full, though. But, man, Scott Frost really just got carried by Mackenzie Milton and, you know, a little bit of Adrian Killens in that one year, and George O'Leary recruits, especially on the defensive side. And he just hasn't been able to do that in Nebraska. I mean, I think when you look at it, Orlando and Nebraska recruit very different people. And the way that he was able to recruit Orlando was a lot better than he was able to recruit Nebraska for UCF style and stature. So I don't think he's going to last at Nebraska, honestly, but he's a good offensive mind. It's going to take a lot to trust him with a team. I'm sure some group of five team will eventually add him, but, you know, it's going to take a while. That actually leads me to the next talking point, not even a game. We're talking college football this weekend. It's not a game. The Big 12 rumors are very soon going to extend invitations to BYU, Houston, Cincinnati, and UCF. So BYU, if you look at it, you get past the whole not playing on Sundays thing. They have a huge fan base. They're pretty much a fan base of an entire religion. You know, they're a big market. They have, their TV deals are good. They're a bigger market than a lot of current Big 12 teams. So you look at all of that, that's a no-brainer. If you can work around the Sunday thing, which I imagine they will, it'll be tough for specifically baseball and softball because the three-game series will have to be Thursday, Friday, Saturday instead of Friday, Saturday, Sunday. That'll hurt those schedules. But aside from that, I really think it's possible to work around it. You know, UCF, you got an up-and-coming team in football, which is the real heavy hitter and why these teams are being added. And the rest of their athletic program has kind of started to get better. I think it's going to take them a little time, specifically in basketball, to get back up to where they were a few years ago when they made the NCAA tournament and almost took down Duke. But I think they're in a good spot in terms of funding and everything there, and certainly joining the Big 12 will help. Cincinnati's kind of along the same roads. You get a team in Ohio. You get a team pretty close to West Virginia, which will be helpful to West Virginia. And you get a team that's been on the rise and shown through their hiring and keeping Luke Fickell that they're not going to be a flash in the pan, which I think is going to help them. Houston, it just makes sense to add another Texas team, honestly. I think it was going to be down between SMU, them, and Memphis, but not surprised to see Houston go forward in that sense. That's really it. Big 12 adding four more teams. It's going to take a while for them to join the league, though, just based on buyouts and grant of rights and all of that legalese that I am not smart enough to understand. But it'll be exciting. It's obviously not going to be the same stature as it was under Oklahoma and Texas, but I still think they can put together competitive teams and they can be marketable, which is really what I think they wanted. They wanted to be marketable and form a cohesive group because none of the other teams got poached. But going back, talking about a team that was also formerly in the American Athletic, Fresno State took down UConn 45-0. I honestly don't get why UConn still has a football program. They fully admitted it by going to the Big East that it doesn't matter to them. And honestly, they're losing money with it. People talk about football being a moneymaker. It's a money pit for UConn. So I think you really got to think about it, sadly enough. But, you know, why do they have a football program if it's money pit, they don't get in good recruits, and they just consistently lose games? Maybe even drop down to FCS. I don't know. But as they exist right now, they cannot exist like this right now. San Jose State took down Southern Utah 45-14. Southern Utah also just lost to Arizona State yesterday. So Southern Utah, not very good. I'm shocked too. UCLA beat Hawaii 44-0. So really, people want to take a lot out of this game, but I mean, I think you can tell that UCLA does have a lot of potential because of it. But really, Hawaii's been facing a lot of things just from the nature of that state and their restrictions still. It's weird to say it like this, but I get why Hawaii played that bad. I think UCLA, really, this week against LSU, I'll talk about it later, is going to be their real chance to prove their expectations right. UTEP won a game over New Mexico State. I am even more shocked about this because UTEP doesn't typically win a lot of games. And to win it like this on the road, pretty good regardless of what you think for UTEP. Struggling football program, just to get a win in any way, honestly. There were a lot of games yesterday, too. Ohio State beat Minnesota 45-31. Tulsa lost to UC Davis, which is very bad because UC Davis, they're actually a solid program there in the Big Sky. I believe they're ranked, correct me if I'm wrong, which you can, of course, 23rd in FCS polling for this year. And all of the FCS teams are playing at the same time, which is going to help. But they're a pretty solid FCS team. But Tulsa, it's going to be, I get why they play that. They lost Zach Smith. They lost basically their entire defense. Two of them are going to play Saturday at Faurot Field. But they lost basically that entire fantastic defense. So it makes sense. And then finally, for the games that have already happened, Boise State blew a huge lead to UCF, and the Gus Bus got rolling. What I would say is ahead of schedule. I didn't really expect them to beat Boise State. I thought it would be a good game. But that three-hour rain delay, thunderstorm, you know, weather delay, was pretty bad for the quality of play. You know, the long snapper kept missing things. You know, players kind of weren't at their peak that I think they would have been if they had started on time. But yeah, so I think UCF has a bit of potential there in the American Athletic this year to be a little more competitive than they were last year. But that is all I have for looking back at college football. Let's look ahead right after this break.
Saturday in Columbia is KCOU.
And welcome back to Hate the Player, Not the Game. Let's get started going through the week one matchups, mostly ranked matchups going on. And this week, I mean the ones I'm going to talk about. But let's get started. There's actually a matchup happening right when this show finishes. The number 10 ranked North Carolina Tar Heels are visiting the Virginia Tech Hokies tonight. The Tar Heels are actually ranked high to start the season again. You know, there's a lot of expectations for North Carolina this year. Mack Brown really has them going in the right direction. Howell, I think, should have a good year. The problem is, and it's a problem that's been pointed out a lot, so I won't beat the dead horse too much, but he just does not have a lot else on offense. And by that, I mean just not a lot of, you know, good weapons. The offensive line is good enough, but really just not enough playmaking going on outside of him that really would help him. So honestly, if I have to pick an upset this week, this is the one I would take, because Virginia Tech, I think, is going to be a little better than people are expecting, and I'm not sure if North Carolina is a top 10 team, to be honest. I mean, we'll see if I'm proved wrong, but that's just how I'm feeling right now. But moving on to the Saturday slate of games, the San Jose State Spartans are going to visit the number 15 USC Trojans in a battle of Greece and a reenactment of the Trojan War in Los Angeles at the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum. So Nick Starkle's boys are going to have an extremely tough task facing a USC team that I think actually might meet their preseason expectations. I think this USC team could actually be a very good team. Keaton Slovis is going to have to play good, but I think USC is going to be very good this year. The thing is, I think this is going to be a tricky opener for USC. It's honestly probably one of their biggest games of the year. Did not appear to be when they scheduled San Jose State, but you know, this is going to be a tough matchup, honestly. San Jose State has the playmaking to get by this USC team. Yeah, if this game doesn't go their way, I mean, Clay Helton's seat might warm up a little more, but I think USC is going to be pretty good this year, so that shouldn't matter. One thing that not a lot of people have been pointing out, USC has a pretty young O-line. You got a couple redshirt freshmen in there, which is young for an O-line, and they don't have experience, obviously, from being redshirt. And San Jose State returns a bit on that defense. Offense, they kind of lost a few pieces, but on defense, they really return a lot. So I think at that point, at some point, you're definitely going to have to trust experience over size and athleticism. And this San Jose State team has proven time and again to be a very solid team when it comes to that side of the ball and on the offense. But I think it's going to come down to Keaton Slovis, honestly. If he has a good game, I don't think USC is going to have any trouble. But if he doesn't, you know, could be a tough task for USC. I think if the offense struggles, this is going to be a really tough game for USC to pull out. But, you know, this USC team's good. So I'd pick them, to be honest. But that's another game I'd watch intently. And, you know, based on my upset picks in the past, that I'm good at picking upsets for exactly one team, and that's Tulsa. And obviously that's not the case this year since they're losing to UC Davis. Penn State is going to visit Wisconsin. The Nittany Lions are ranked 19th, and Wisconsin is ranked 12th. So Graham Mertz had a pretty big outing his first game of the year last year for Wisconsin. And then, you know, everything kind of for Wisconsin fell off a cliff. Not really his fault specifically, but they just had a really hard season last year. They went through a lot. So did Penn State, though. Penn State had a really bad season. So this should be an interesting game just to see how these two teams bounce back. I'm not sure about all of the hype they've been given, but, you know, we'll just have to see what happens. I think they could be as good as advertised. How we were talking about Fresno State demolishing UConn earlier, they might be on the other side of that because they are visiting Autzen Stadium in Eugene and playing number 11 Oregon this weekend. This, I think, is going to be one of the funnest. I'm probably going to say that a million times, but this is going to be one of the most fun games of this weekend just because I think Fresno State's going to be better than advertised. And I think Oregon is going to be as good as advertised. This Oregon team, you know, even through all they went through, still won the Pac-12 last year and then went to the Fiesta Bowl and, you know, got destroyed by Iowa State. But they still made it there. And, you know, they're returning. They have a lot of pieces on defense that I think are going to be very good. Kayvon Thibodeau, it's going to be incredible, I hope. You know, we'll just have to see how this goes. Jake Kiener for Fresno State, if he plays bad and, you know, false pressure, because Autzen Stadium is not a fun place to play if you're an opposing quarterback. He's going to have the pressure of that and a fantastic Oregon defense. That's going to be tough, but you know, if he plays it off his mind, Fresno State might have a shot, but I won't push too hard on that. Alabama's playing Miami. As much as I would love to talk about this, I think we all know how this one's gonna end up. Miami's ranked 14th, Alabama's ranked first, but these early games specifically, they always play ACC teams in these early games, and it's always just a complete drubbing. The line's at like 20. So, you know, yeah, Miami they could have potential this year, but this isn't going to go their way. And similarly, I'm going to talk, the other Miami is visiting number 8 Cincinnati. That one's also going to be rough for schools named Miami. You know, Miami's, you got to start getting better. Number 17, Indiana, is visiting number 18, Iowa. So this is an intriguing matchup. Indiana is going to have a big battle to compete in their division this year. They're back to being in you know, the East Division. They got to go through that. But Iowa should be seen as a clear number two behind Wisconsin, I think. But Michael Penix Jr. Is coming back and I think should have a pretty good campaign. This Iowa secondary, I think, is pretty solid. And, you know, Iowa's always consistent. So I think it's going to be a big test for Indiana in a road environment. But it could be bet hard for them. Number 23, Louisiana Lafayette, is visiting number 21, Texas. This is another one like that San Jose State-USC game. When they made the schedule, they did not expect this to be a good game. This is, you know, just a typical bye game, and it ended up being a ranked matchup. I get why one of these teams is ranked. Louisiana Lafayette's pretty good. Texas, I mean, they're riding in on hopes. You know, they've had a good offseason under Sark, but we haven't seen him be a head coach in a game in a full-time capacity since USC. And that was a long time ago, believe it or not. That was a while ago. So I don't know why they're just everybody's so gung-ho about Sarkisian in Texas. Outside of Alabama, he really hasn't had very successful since. So, you know, I might be a little biased because of everything that happened in Atlanta, but I'm just not really a believer in Texas yet. It's going to take a hell of a whooping to make me believe in Texas being a number 21 ranked team, or being a really good team. And twofold, Louisiana Lafayette's returning 20 starters from an already really good team last year. They went under the radar because of all of the other really good teams, from Coastal Carolina to BYU to Cincinnati last year. But Louisiana Lafayette really not surprised. They just keep building, and, you know, I think they're even better, and I think they're going to really compete in their conference this year. And I think this is going to be a really really good game. I'm going to keep saying fun game to watch. So, you know, Texas also lose four of their top five tacklers. So, against the Raging Cajun offense that, you know, is pretty powerful, at least last year, that's going to be an interesting, tough task for the Texas defense. Number five, Georgia, is visiting the Duke Mayo Bowl Classic. And number three, Clemson, that is at Bank of America Stadium, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong. What a welcome for DJ Ugalele. Yeah, ultimately, I think what it comes down to is just an experience from Clemson's quarterback, DJ Ugalele. And, you know, JT Daniels is pretty experienced on the other side, too. And these are two pretty evenly matched teams outside of that. And I think that's really going to be the big factor. I think Georgia is going to be pretty good this year. So, should be an interesting one to watch. Number 16 is visiting UCLA. This is another game people have pinned as a possible upset. You know, LSU obviously has not played in a while, but they struggled last year, and, you know, they're kind of right back up to where their hype circus was at the beginning of last year. Like, oh, they're not going to be as good as that national championship team, but they're still going to be a solid top 25 team. They really haven't proved anything. Dorian Thompson-Green, you know, he's the real deal for UCLA. I think he's going to have a very solid year. And, you know, you got Chip Kelly calling the offense. So I know that might not amount to much anymore, but still Chip Kelly. So I think that one could be pretty surprising to a lot of folks around here. And then finally, just about a mile, if not less, away from here, Mizzou will face Central Michigan. I will be in studio for this game, but this should be a good game for Mizzou to, you know, get out that rust and bolts. Good second year under Coach Eli Drinkwitz, and, you know, keep going with that upward string this program seems to be on. So hopefully that'll be a good game tomorrow for my sake. But that is going to be it for college football. Make sure to tune in next week as I reveal how stupid I am and how wrong all of these takes are as Miami of Ohio goes on to beat Cincinnati by a score of 70-0. After the break, be talking some baseball. Very excited to go over that in the incredible September and what's going to be an incredible playoffs, I hope, coming up. Thank you for listening to KCLU 88.1 FM and Hate the Player, Not the Game. All right, welcome back. Let's go and quickly run through what's happening in the world of baseball in ceiling signs this week. So, it's been a pretty eventful summer for baseball. You know, you got your dog days, but you got a lot of fun going on. So, let's quickly run through the standings. That'll make things a lot easier. So, the Tampa Bay Rays are 84-50 in first place in the AL East and the entire American League. 6.5 games up on the New York Yankees, who are 77-56 and currently should be in play for a wild card. Yes, they are alongside the Boston Red Sox, who are 77-59 and currently occupying that sweet second wild card slot. And then moving on to the AL Central, the Chicago White Sox have run away with the whole thing, 78-56, 9.5 games above Cleveland, the newly minted Guardians. That also happened over the summer. But yeah, so the White Sox running away with it. That's the, you know, I was talking about two divisions locked up. That's one of them. Houston is also 78 wins, but 55 losses. So a half game up on the White Sox, 4.5 games up on the Oakland Athletics, who are very close to that second wild card spot, just 2 games back. And then 2 games back of them, 4 games back of the second wild card spot, are the Seattle Mariners looking to break the longest postseason drought in Major League Baseball. Okay, moving on to the National League, the Atlanta Braves, coming off a very strong week, are 2 games up on the Philadelphia Phillies. Still just 71-62 in the incredibly weak NL East, but the Braves are starting to put some distance between themselves and the other teams in the division. In the NL Central, it has too become a one-horse race as the Milwaukee Brewers are 82-53, 10 games up on the Cincinnati Reds, who still hold the second wild card slot in the NL because the first is held by the tie of the Los Angeles Dodgers and San Francisco Giants, both tied for the best record in Major League Baseball at 85-49. 1 game up of the Tampa Bay Rays after tonight. Not going to be, one team will not be 1 game up, and one team is at least going to be 1 game up because they are playing each other this weekend. But still, they're tied technically for that first wild card spot. You know, just a cool 13.5 games up on the Cincinnati Reds. And therefore, 14 games up on the San Diego Padres, who have become a non-factor in that division race. So, let's talk about this because we have a fantastic series coming up right this weekend between the San Francisco Giants and Los Angeles Dodgers. And what makes this even more fun is that tonight's DeSclafani versus David Price. So, you know, a pitcher who had a good, strong first half and has kind of dipped in August. And Price, who has not had a good year at all. And then outside of that, you got Julio Urías and Walker Buehler. You know, the two pitchers who I feel have faced the Giants the most this season, because it's incredibly frustrating to watch as a fan of that team in San Francisco. And the Giants have a blank space and a blank space. So people, it's pretty clear it's going to be Sammy Long in the first game, and then Jose Quintana in the second game starting, who, if he can turn it around, Angels fans are going to be very mad at the San Francisco Giants for. But I think this is going to be a good series, because honestly, the fact that the Giants don't have starters and are going with the bullpen game could be good, because yesterday they had Logan Webb go 7 innings. Tyler Rogers did not have a lot of work in that 8th inning. Jake McGee had a little more in the 9th, but except for that, the bullpen's pretty good and rearing to go. They did have to work a bit in that Cueto game, but, you know, Gausman did pretty good in, you know, lengthening timeout. He gave them 6 good innings, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, in that game against the Brewers. But this bullpen is going to need to have a really good series. I think that's what's going to come down to, is the bullpen. The Dodgers bullpen, ever since they had a little bit of a rough stretch against the Giants back before the All-Star break, has been rolling. So we'll just have to see what happens. But whoever wins this series will be in first place in the NL West. And, you know, it's going to be in a good position to run away with it. But when you look at who the teams have to face, the Giants got a lot of games against the Padres and the Rockies, and, you know, maybe a few against Arizona, and then, you know, you got Chicago and Atlanta. But the Dodgers still have to face the Brewers again. And aside from that, you know, you got all the typical, while I pull up the schedule, you got all the typical NL West matchups going on. You know, no more games against the Giants, though. But they got to face the Padres, the D-backs, and Colorado. Then you got a series against Cincinnati on the road. Cincinnati's been pretty good lately. You got a series against St. Louis on the road, who is a team composed of San Francisco Giants killers. They go and face them on a short rest, though, between Sunday and Monday. So that could be a factor in that first game. And then you finish it out with the Brewer series, which, if I'm going to be honest, is going to probably work best for LA, because the Brewers will be far and away locked up in the NL Central. There aren't that many games to go. This is going to come down to the wire. I honestly think both of these teams are going to get 100 wins. So, you know, things are going to be rather crazy, if I'm going to be honest. However, you know, it's a lot of fun. It is a lot of fun. Outside of that, we do have some good series going on. The Padres and Astros are playing. The Pirates and Cubs already wrapped up their game today. Chicago won that, which I'm sure Cubs fans will be mad about, because they want to lose now. You know, A's Blue Jays, that could be interesting. So, be a fun weekend of baseball, and hopefully a fun week of baseball. But that is going to be it for Hate the Player, Not the Game, Episode 1. Thank you for tuning in. Make sure to have a great weekend. Make sure to catch me here tomorrow for Tiger pregame, halftime, and postgame.